And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good morning, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop on Washington, part of the Dialogue series on Pacifica. You can hear us every Wednesday at 11, and specifically the Inside Scoop, the second Wednesday of the month. My name is Mark Levine, and I am a former congressional attorney. I used to work for the second-ranking Democrat on the House Judiciary Committee and the House Homeland Security Committee. And working as an attorney in Congress, I saw all kinds of public information that was not available to the public. Oh, it was out there, but it wasn't covered by the Washington Post and the New York Times. That's why I'm here on the air giving you the inside scoop. Today, an explosive story about connections between white supremacists and Islamic terrorists, and the FBI covering it up. That's right, you would think that when white supremacists and Islamic terrorists get together to plan terrorist attacks in the United States, this would be something our government would want to cover. You'd be wrong. Indeed, the FBI so botched the investigation, because mostly they were doing illegal wiretapping, that they decided not to investigate at all. And we know this is true because it's been confirmed by no less than Republican Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa. We also know it's true because of the integrity of my guest today. His name is Mike German. He's a former FBI agent working 16 years infiltrating white supremacist organizations. And as you expect, I will ask him all the tough questions that you want. But because this is dialogue, I expect you to ask the tough questions too. So give us a call, 202-588-0893, and ask him all the questions you want to ask as well. Mike German, welcome to Dialogue.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Let me start with your background. You were an FBI agent for 16 years.
Right.
And mostly infiltrating white supremacist organizations.
That's what I sort of made my bread and butter there. But I did all sorts of undercover work and did all sorts of other regular overt investigations as well, particularly white-collar crime investigations.
Now, back in the 90s, you were influential in stopping a bombing of an African-American church in Los Angeles.
Yes, this was in Los Angeles in 1992 to 1993. There was a Joint Terrorism Task Force investigation regarding white supremacist skinhead groups and above-ground groups that were arming them in the time period when Los Angeles was suffering through the Rodney King riots, the riots following the Rodney King police beating. So it was a very volatile time and a time of great racial strife in the city, and a group of white supremacists was trying to take advantage of that unrest and basically use terrorism in order to increase the level of violence and actually start what they called a racial holy war.
And you helped stop that, and I think a lot of people are very grateful for the work that you've done. Now, let's fast forward to 2002, January, right after September 11th, 2001. You were called out from the Tampa office.
Right. I was, as I said, I'd been doing a lot of different kinds of undercover work, and because of my experience infiltrating white supremacist groups, I was called when the Tampa office found out that a supporter of an Islamic terrorist group had actually reached out to a local white supremacist group looking for support based on their shared hatred of Jews. And they called me and asked me if I could infiltrate and basically stand between the groups.
And you actually got recordings of some of these people talking to each other.
Right. How they found out about it was they had a FBI cooperating witness who had recorded this meeting. It actually, and it was interesting because it wasn't the first meeting, but it was the first one that the FBI actually had a recording of the meeting taking place.
Now, I know you're not allowed specifically to say what was on these tapes, but you are allowed to say what Senator Grassley has put in the congressional record about these tapes. So without asking what was on the tapes, let me ask you, what has Senator Grassley said was on the tapes?
Well, it was interesting sort of how that developed, where at first the FBI denied that it happened at all and didn't realize that I had a copy of the transcript. This was when I was still in the FBI, so I brought that to the FBI headquarters and to the Inspector General of the Department of Justice to show them that the FBI was not being truthful in denying that the meeting happened. And when they still wouldn't acknowledge that the meeting happened, I resigned from the FBI and told Senator Grassley what happened. And he spent over 2 years demanding the transcript and finally got it and released portions of it into the congressional records. And it's clear that what's discussed is related to terrorists.
Well, for example, approval of suicide bombings. That's
right.
Grassley says is on the tape. Assassinating journalists in the United States.
Right.
Fomenting civil war in the United States.
Right.
Their shared admiration for Hitler.
Right.
Getting arms shipments from Iran.
Right.
And shooting Jews.
Yes.
That was on the tape. Okay. So this is on the tape, and most of it was legally recorded, because the law is that if you have one person in a room, the federal law is,
right.
There's different state laws, but if you have one person in the room and they consent to the recording, you can record any conversation under federal law. Now, I should warn listeners, as a lawyer, that state laws differ on this, so there may be additional state regulations. But at least down in Florida, it was only regulated by federal law, and these things were mostly legally recorded. But part of it, the agent stepped out of the room, and that small part of it was illegally recorded.
Right, exactly. The federal law was implicated because he was doing it under the authority of the FBI. So that's why the state law didn't matter.
Okay.
But he did step out of the room at one point, and that's what led to a portion of the transcript being recorded illegally.
Okay, so 95% of it is recorded perfectly legally, no problem with it. Maybe 5% of the tape is done illegally. If you remove the 5% that was illegally recorded, do you still have the case against the white supremacists and the Islamic terrorists? They still talk about the violence, all of the information that could be used to prevent a terrorist attack. That's all in the legal recordings, right?
Right. There's actually a process that should be followed when something is accidentally recorded illegally, where you can excise that portion of the tape and still use the rest of the tape that was recorded legally. So there was a way to fix it.
And in fact, the part that was illegally recorded wasn't even necessary for the investigation.
To tell you the truth, I don't know what the part was.
Okay.
Because that was never investigated.
All right, fair enough. But the part that was legally recorded, in your mind, was all these things that I talked about that Chuck Grassley has put in the record, more than severe enough to warrant an investigation.
Certainly, yes. And it did. I mean, they actually called me up and asked me to come and do the investigation. So they felt that way at first
okay.
as well.
So they said they're going to investigate this. You go down to Tampa. You hear these tapes. You say, wow, these people are dangerous. We need to look into this stuff.
Right.
And then what happened?
They basically dropped the ball. They didn't get the investigation up in a rapid fashion. They couldn't decide which FBI substantive office, whether it was going to be an international terrorism case or a domestic terrorism case, finally decided it would be a drug case. And it was this very odd.
Were there drugs involved in this?
Not in the portion of the investigation I was working on. There was a separate investigation that was completely unrelated to this recording.
Okay, so we have domestic white supremacists working with foreign Islamic terrorists, and they can't decide whether it should be domestic or foreign, so they put it in the drug arena.
Basically, yes.
All right, okay. Now, they come to you. You're the expert. You study this thing, and you discover the small portion that's illegal, right?
Right. It came out of a conversation I had with the cooperating witness, the FBI cooperating witness, who he mentioned that he was out of the room for a portion. That's the first that I heard that there was a problem with this tape.
So you told them what?
That you need to take care of it. You need to follow the procedures in order to excise that portion.
And they didn't do that?
They told me they were going to pretend it didn't happen.
They told you they were going to pretend it didn't happen?
Right.
Mike, okay, so you tell them, okay, this is how you deal with the procedure, and they say, no, that's okay, we'll pretend it didn't happen. Did it sound like they'd done this kind of thing before?
What became clear to me is they had never been through a prosecution on a case like this, because I had been through a couple at this point, and, you know, the defense attorneys are very good at turning over every stone. And you know, any mistake that you made, they bring out. And that's how the process is supposed to work. But so it became very clear to me that they did not know how to run a proper investigation. And if they had been using this procedure in the past, where when bad things happen, they just pretend they didn't, I don't know how they were successful in their investigation.
Okay, so they said they're going to pretend it didn't happen. You told them you can't do that.
Right. I mean, ultimately, it would be me taking the stand with my right hand up saying that it didn't happen when I knew that it did, so I was unwilling to go along with that.
And they weren't happy with your unwillingness to go along with that?
No, they weren't.
What did they say?
I reported it through my chain of command to let my management know that there was a problem, and immediately I was ostracized from the case. effectively taken off the case, even though officially they approved the case, which was one of the problems where they hadn't yet decided where to put it. They had not actually approved.
They took you off the case?
Yes.
Because you wanted to insist that proper procedures be done?
Right.
So you complained to your superior?
Right. And, you know, for the first several months, my larger concern was the mission was being lost. In other words, they were so focused on sort of rebuffing my claims that they were losing sight of the fact that there were these two people out there who may find other means to accomplish their goals.
Okay. And but that, so you kept calling and saying, hey, how's the investigation going?
Right.
And they kept saying what?
And finally told me never to call again.
Told you never to call again?
Yes.
Stop bugging us.
Called my boss and told him to tell me never to call again.
They didn't say it was proceeding. It wasn't proceeding. They just said, hey, don't call us anymore.
Right. And on paper, it was approved with my name as doing the work. So it was
so
a very
odd
situation.
You were supposed to look into it. All right. So finally, you complained to your boss, and your boss didn't do anything.
Well, he just reported it up the chain of command.
All right. And this is when it went to the inspector general?
No. When nothing happened, I realized there was some gap and something wasn't making sense, so I called the inspector general's office and reported it to them.
Okay, now the inspector general, explain to our listeners what that is.
Inspector general works outside the Department of Justice, and they're supposed to be an independent watchdog over the department, so they're out of the chain of command, and so that they can criticize the department without worrying about getting their putting their jobs in jeopardy.
Okay, so you went to the inspector general. You said, hey, I said that they should follow correct procedure here. These are dangerous people, white supremacists, Islamic terrorists, talking about terrorist acts. They're not following forward. And the inspector general then did what?
They said that they would look into it, that they would write a letter to the FBI saying that the FBI had a certain amount of time in which to conduct an investigation of this matter, and otherwise they would take it over themselves. And about a month after reporting that, or even less than that, a couple of weeks after reporting it, the agent who I spoke to at the inspector general's office called me up and said, we just received a memo from the Tampa field office, and I need you to read it. And basically what the memo said was, Mike Sherman isn't telling the truth. This meeting didn't happen. There is no recording. He's been misled.
There's no recording. There's no transcript. Oh, and by the way, they didn't talk about terrorism anyway.
Right.
But you had the transcript.
Right.
You had the recording.
They apparently didn't realize that during the course of the investigation, I had a copy of the transcript.
So you went to the inspector general and said, they claim I'm lying. They say there's no transcript. Here's the transcript.
Right. And now it's a bigger issue because it's not just that they have dropped the ball on an investigation. It's that they've actually written false documents in order to cover their tracks. They had actually backdated official FBI documents. And later on it came out they had actually taken white out and altered some FBI documents.
Now, the people that did this, that did the cover-up, have they been prosecuted? Has the FBI fired them? What's happened with them?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. I mean, years later, the inspector general in January of 2006 finally issued a report documenting that these infractions had taken place, and the FBI director was asked by Senator Mueller whether anybody would be...
By
Senator Grassley, if they would follow up with investigating these people, and the director said they would not.
The director said they would not follow up?
That they had no plans on conducting any further investigation.
Now, let's talk about the FBI director, Robert Mueller, because you went in personally to talk to him about this, didn't you?
Well, I did. You weren't allowed to just walk into the director's office. I sent him personally an email that contained the records to let him know that this was a problem. But you got to remember, this was in, I guess, by the time that I contacted the director, this was January of 2003. So this was the period when... the 9/11 Commission was just getting started, and there was a lot of discussion about taking terrorism away from the FBI, and the FBI was making repeated comments that we've reformed ourselves and that, we're now competent to take on this challenge. And here was a case that was being dropped post 9/11 that was going to really, I felt, be a black eye for the FBI, so I wanted to get the director's office engaged immediately so that he could... It appeared to me at that point that he was sincere in wanting to really reform the FBI.
Well, he seemed to be sincere, but when you told Robert Mueller by email, Director Mueller, about what was going on, something happened to you.
Right. Instead of investigating the problems with the case, they started investigating me.
And specifically, in what way?
I found out later they had sent what are called inspectors within the FBI down to the Tampa field offices asking questions about me and my behavior. It was really kind of remarkable. They investigated me for having improperly traveled down there at the Tampa's office's request, even though they acknowledged that there was an official
request. They went through your travel receipts.
Right. And other receipts, literally found a $50 payment that they felt that I was accused of doing it improperly. And when they came back to me and told me that they had done this investigation, they said, well, you don't have anything to worry about because we found you didn't do anything wrong.
Okay, but so let's get this straight. So you go to the inspector general. Let's just get the facts here. You go to the inspector general. They come back and say, there's no transcript. There's no terrorism. Don't worry about it. You said, I have the transcript.
Right.
Then you go to the director of the FBI. And you say, this is serious stuff here. This is a serious cover-up here. And they come back, and instead they investigate you for some $50 travel expense that turns out was okay anyway. And the white supremacists, the Islamic terrorists, the people working together to do suicide bombings, assassinate journalists, to start a civil war in the United States, shoot Jews, get arms shipment from Iran, and share their admiration for Hitler, they're left by the wayside.
Right.
And that's the situation still today.
And that was the situation I was in for another 2 years while the IG investigated it. And finally, after 2 years, I realized there was no real interest in pursuing it. And I left the FBI and reported it to Congress.
And you had to leave the FBI before you could report it to Congress?
Well, I actually reported it right as I was leaving,
right before I left.
Because I
and
knew
so
that
your
my
16-year career of infiltrating white supremacist organizations and helping to stop these organizations from doing their acts of violence ended because the FBI wanted to cover up their error here.
And, you know, the FBI does not like internal criticism. And I realized that even just making a complaint to my boss caused me undue suffering over 2 years. And I knew that once I reported outside the FBI that my career would be no longer something that I was going to be able to accomplish anything there.
Okay, this is dialogue, so it's very important to get our listeners involved, and I want to open up the phone lines, 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893. Mike German is the author of a book called Thinking Like a Terrorist. Just briefly, tell us about your book.
Well, you know, one of the things that I was frustrated about, and once I left the FBI, was that I had a whole lot of knowledge about how terrorists operate and sort of what are good strategies for combating terrorism. And it was all in my head, and I couldn't help the FBI or the other law enforcement agencies get a record of what I learned from my undercover work. So I wanted to put it in a form that people could read it and understand better what this problem is all about.
And so your book details, like the title says, how terrorists think.
Right, what they're actually trying to accomplish and what their strategy is.
How do terrorists think? I mean, when white supremacists, what are they thinking about? What's their goal? How do they think?
You know, it's very strategic. I mean, we tend to think their violence, since it's so awful and horrible, that it's insane, that there's no real strategic purpose behind it, when in fact it's very methodical. It's a very specific strategy that they're trying to accomplish certain goals by forcing the government to overreact to their violence and impact people's lives who have nothing to do with the terrorism. So that they become frustrated with their own government.
All right, let's go to the phone lines, 202-588-0893. Bo, welcome to Dialogue.
Yes, I find this discussion quite interesting. First of all, it'll come to a shock to a lot of listeners of PFW that there are actually foreigners who want to do us harm, as well as white supremacists. I've heard many times on here people say it's all made up by the government, that nobody really wants to harm us. But evidently, sir, you have run across people who do want to harm us. The question I have for you is, what if the investigation was botched and no one got arrested, no one was prosecuted, what stopped this heinous act of terror from happening? If they really wanted to harm us, which I believe everything you say, what actually stopped them from doing it if it was not you infiltrating or another government or organization infiltrating and stopping them? Why did they not carry out their plan?
Great question, Bo. Mike?
And the purpose of the meeting, you know, it was a preliminary meeting. I mean, you could imagine that these two groups not share a common ideology and simply have one aspect of their ideology that have similar goals. So the purpose of the meeting was simply to establish contacts that they could then use to support one another. You know, one of the things that I'm not allowed to say is the names of the two groups. So if you knew what those names were, you would know that they continue to be a threat. Now, whether these two individuals continued their support for those groups, none of us know. And those
sometimes they take their time. I mean, people talk about the fact that the first World Trade Center bombing in 93, there was an 8-year lapse before the second World Trade Center bombing.
Right. And you got to understand, too, that not all the criminal activity these groups are involved in result in violence. In other words, there's all sorts of criminal activity that they have to accomplish because they're a clandestine organization. And, you know, the purpose of this meeting was simply to establish those ties so that they could support one another going forward. And
okay, thanks. Great question, Bo. Derek, welcome to Dialogue here.
Yes. Just a second. Yes, I hope I'm not asking a question that's entirely too ignorant, but I was just wondering if you wouldn't mind helping me pinpoint those of us who don't know exactly what is it that these neo-Nazis or white supremacist organizations hate about Jews and people of Nubian descent?
Why do they hate Jews and blacks?
You know, it's interesting. The white supremacist movement is actually made up of a number of very different ideologies. Some of them are religious-based. Some of them are simply political groups. Some are atheistic. So each one has their own different ideology, but for the most part, what they believe is that there is this worldwide conspiracy against white people, and that the Jews control this conspiracy, which is why much of their animus is focused on Jews, and that the Jews use the other races against white people to keep white people from realizing their natural place in control of the world. So they look at things like the United Nations, they look at things like the State of Israel as manifestations of this worldwide conspiracy. And it goes way back. I mean, you know, white supremacy wasn't something that started 10 years ago or 50 years ago. You know, Hitler didn't start white supremacy. There was the slave trade back in, you know, the 1600s and 1700s. It's a long standing ideology that white people somehow deserve to be placed above other races in the world, and they see their history as tracing along with that.
Now, I'm sitting across from Mike German right now, and he's got blonde hair, and he definitely fits a certain stereotype. Mike, was it hard in infiltrating these groups to sort of remember your cover? I mean, you know, did you have to say swear words and use, you know, awful phrases and talking about Jews and blacks just to hold a conversation with these people? And do you sometimes forget? I mean, is that hard?
As far as the language, that was very difficult. You know, and again, this was a criminal investigation.
But you have to play a role. I mean, you have to use the N-word. You have to do all these things that you wouldn't normally do.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that I got good at doing is rather than they produce a tremendous amount of written material. So what I would do is refer to the written material. That way it was very clear that these words weren't coming out of my mouth and weren't my ideas, but rather I was referencing some written material that they had given me. And that way I could engage in these discussions, yet when the tape went before a jury, I could easily explain to the jury that this isn't Mike German, FBI agent, saying this. This is, you know, an undercover operation where I'm having to engage in this kind of language.
But it must be hard to trod that line. I mean, half of you is trying to get street cred, you know, to have them believe that you are this white supremacist.
Right.
And the other half of you is you don't want to encourage these people to commit the criminal acts that they're already predisposed to commit. Is that a hard line to know the difference?
Not if your investigation is focused properly. In other words, if I came into the meeting and I knew because of other investigation that you were selling machine guns. I would go in there as a potential machine gun buyer.
I see.
You know, but there was already that criminal predicate that I had some level of evidence that you were engaged in criminality. So I'm not going in there because you're a neo-Nazi and I don't like what you believe. I'm going in there because I have evidence that you're engaged in criminal activity, and my job as an investigator is to get that, the evidence of your criminal activity.
I see. All right, 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893. Joe, welcome to the Inside Scoop, part of Dialogue.
Good. I appreciate the show, gentlemen. Here's my question. It's a little bit off the mark. Prior to the president running for the presidency, there was an investigation done about him going AWOL during his National Guard tour. There was a lot of legitimacy behind the investigation, and then, of course, he won the presidency. And then Dan Rather brought it back to light, and, of course, Dan Rather got fired because he was set up by Karl Rove, I believe. But my question is, do you have any knowledge about the initial documentation about the president going AWOL?
Let me answer the question, and then I'll pass it to Mike. I'll tell you that I myself have done an investigation of this. It's on my website, radioinsidescoop.com. It dates way back to February, I think, 04. And if you go to my website and you click on the broadcast archive, and you can do a search for AWOL or just go all the way down to 04, you'll see a very, very long description complete with documents that show exactly the orders that George Bush violated and how he didn't show up. So I can tell you that I, Mark Levine, have completely investigated this, and you should check it out. I don't know whether that's Mike German's bailiwick. Mike?
No, I don't have any.
Okay, so it's not from Mike, but you can check it out from me, Mark Levine, radioinsidescoop.com. Click on the broadcast archive. Look at February 04, and you'll see that I have a lot of details with links to, about three dozen different documents. You can actually see the order where they ordered George Bush to show up and that he refused to take a drug test, and it's all in there. So I've done that, but that's not what Agent German's here to do.
I appreciate the show, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and thank you for calling. We want to encourage other people to call in. The toll-free number is 202-588-0893. We have Candace now. Welcome to Dialogue.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I can appreciate what Mr. German has done and his service with respect to the FBI and to his country, to the government. I do question a couple of things. 9/11, you know, Bo called in earlier with the people, we don't believe in, there are those of us who don't believe in the terrorists exist and all that. I'm one of those who believes that 9/11 was set up to do exactly what's being done, to take away more and more of our civil liberties. And that terrorism is ad infinitum. You can put everything under terrorism. We may have had some people, those few who were anti-U.S., that's a given what the U.S. has done around the world. That would be a given. But this terrorist thing, and I always put terrorist in quotation marks because, as I said, you can do warrantless wiretapping under terrorism, under the guise of terrorism. You can suspend the writ of habeas corpus under the guise of terrorism. You can take away people's property under eminent domain, under the guise of terrorism. So all of that, and on and on and on. Now, having said that, my question is, with respect to white supremacists, why are they called, committing crimes, but they're not called terrorists? And if they are what the definition is of a true white supremacist, why would they be dealing with people of color, which Islamic quote-unquote terrorists are, because they're
holding
against
Candace.
People of color.
By the way, let me just say that I certainly agree with you that the actions conducted by the Bush administration, whether it's torture or warrantless wiretapping or holding people in prison without trial, certainly can fall in the definition of terrorism. And so I'm not disputing any of that. And I also certainly agree that white supremacists are as much terrorists as the people that blow up the World Trade Center. But let me ask Mike your question. Why do white supremacists, if they believe in the superiority of the white race, why are they dealing with Arabs who are not white at all?
Well, let me go back to that definition of terrorism, because that's one of the things I talk about in my book, that I think you're right. It is counterproductive to talk about terrorism. When I did my investigations, we didn't prosecute anyone for terrorism. We prosecuted people for making illegal machine guns, for making illegal bombs, for blowing things up, those crimes. And that's really a more effective way at addressing this problem, because really it's just criminal activity. And we don't, you know, as the United States of America shouldn't care what people think, as long as they don't behave badly. And if people are behaving badly, we should focus on that behavior rather than the ideas that drive them to that behavior. As far as...
why do white supremacists hang out with non-whites to do terrorist acts?
And this goes against the ideology. There are a lot of people, like you said, who have bad ideas, but very few of them will act criminally in order to further those ideas. And that's one thing you have to understand, or I think the government has to understand about these groups, is that by focusing on the ideology, you're focusing on the wrong segment of these groups, that the groups that are actually engaged in the criminal acts have taken a step away from their ideology and are, in fact, in an operational mode where they have a mission orientation. So if I'm a white supremacist and I know that I can fulfill my mission of killing Jews by partnering with an Islamic group that can get me that kind of access or get me materials that I need to accomplish my mission, I'm happy to do that. You know, and
so in other words, a white supremacist will work with a non-white in order to pursue the larger goal of I guess killing Jews or white supremacy or.
And luckily, you don't have to take my word for it anymore, because of the good work of Senator Grassley. The intelligence community and the public at large can go to the congressional record and actually read the transcript of what they're saying. And they say
14 pages in the congressional record.
Right. There's around that.
And so what would someone do? They go to the Congressional Record website and they search for, Grassley?
There was a March 27, 2007 Senate Judiciary Committee FBI oversight hearing. And in the Congressional Record, if you look up the Congressional Record for that hearing, it will be pages. Senator Grassley had pages of the transcript.
And I'll tell you what, I'm going to make it easy for our listeners. When I get home today, I'm going to put this on my website, radioinsidescoop.com, a direct link to the Congressional Record, so you can read the transcript for yourself and find out exactly what these people talked about.
Right. And keep in mind, as you read it, that Senator Grassley just picked out portions to prove that the FBI's description of this transcript wasn't true. So he didn't put
so
the whole transcript in.
There's a lot more to it that isn't even there.
Exactly.
And just to be clear, the Washington Post has still not reported this story.
I'm not aware that they've written a story about
this. Here you have Islamic terrorists working with white supremacists. You have the FBI covering it up. It goes all the way up to the director of the FBI, and the Washington Post isn't even reporting the story.
Right.
Hopefully some listeners can get on the Washington Post about that. The number is 202-588-0893. Marcus, welcome to Dialogue.
Hey, good morning. What's happening?
Good morning.
Listen, the previous caller and the caller several calls back kind of stole my thunder here, because they brought up a question that I wanted to ask, too. It's in with regard to the KKK and organizations like that. I've never heard any official declaration by any of our law-fighting government agencies, and if this has happened, please correct me if I've just been in the dark on this, but I've never heard an official declaration that these groups were terrorist groups. I mean, we often talk about rooting out the terrorists so they don't come over here, but groups like the Klan and others, and I'm only singing out the Klan because I'm African-American, are terrorist groups. They engage in acts to intimidate people, which is the same thing that we're over in Iraq for. Why has there not been an official declaration to, I don't even see why these groups are even allowed to participate or exist or organize legally in the United States.
Mike, you're telling me that there's a watch list of some 800,000 terrorist groups. Is the KKK on that list?
800,000 individuals
or groups.
Right.
Is the KKK on that list? Is the Grand Wizard, the Ku Klux Klan on that list?
I have no idea. I don't know. The list is something separate from anything I was involved in. When I was doing terrorism work, it wasn't about listing. I mean, and I'm against the idea of this watch listing. And one of the things that you have to understand about these groups, you know, even groups that have abhorrent ideologies, if they're not actually engaging in acts of violence.
Okay, but the KKK is engaged in acts of violence.
Certain people within the KKK have engaged in violence. And again, it's a certain subset of that group. And what was great about the way I did investigations was I could go into those groups and I would know who was engaging in violence and who wasn't. So I could focus all the investigative efforts on those people.
And I understand that there are individuals within groups that
right.
do more criminal acts than others. But aren't there groups on the list? I mean, I've heard, you know, that they designate the Iranian National Guard as being on the terrorist list. Does that list include the KKK?
That's a State Department list.
Okay, is that only foreign groups?
Well, because it's a State Department list, I would assume probably it is. Now, one of the things that we have to understand is that these white supremacist groups, the FBI calls them domestic terrorist groups. But
is there a list of domestic terrorist groups?
I would assume that there is, but again, you have to be very careful because a group that has an abhorrent ideology is not necessarily
engaged in violence. I understand, but if it has the abhorrent ideology along with criminal activity, whether it be church bombings or lynchings or any of the other long, long history of the KKK,
right.
But they are being monitored, right? I mean, the FBI does send you, or did send you in your 16 years, to monitor groups, and I don't know if you can say the name, but like the KKK, let's just say groups that are that hate and plan violent acts against, for example, the African-American churches in Los Angeles.
No, we weren't monitoring the groups. I was engaged in an investigation of certain criminal acts so that, you know, there was a criminal predicate to my investigation before I ever started working.
Because the White House has talked about the fact that they say they can go anywhere that's public. For example, they say they can go into a mosque, and they give that example, and listen to the fiery words of a preacher, the imam of the mosque, even when there's no indication that imam has done any criminal activity, and they say it's public, we can take notes, we can attend these meetings. That's their position. There's been some argument from the ACLU mm-hmm. and others that they shouldn't be doing that.
Right.
But if they're doing that with Islamic groups, my question is, and I think this is partly Marcus's question, is are they doing that with domestic terrorist groups like the KKK? Hey, can you talk about it? I don't know if you can.
There are different guidelines for domestic terrorism investigations
uh-huh.
than for international terrorism
uh-huh. So we look at foreign terrorists with a different eye and a different series of operations than we do the domestic ones. Let's face it, are we harsher to the foreign terrorists than we are to the domestic ones?
You know, again, so much of this is just based on a misunderstanding of what the group means, and I'd like to get everybody away from that idea that there is some meaning to this group. These aren't corporations. I never actually joined a group. There was no membership list. There's no, you know, it's not like a gang where there's blood in and blood out. You know, I was doing criminal acts in furtherance of an ideology, but.
But you were
at
doing
that
criminal
level,
acts. You were investigating criminal acts.
Well, right? You know, as an undercover agent, I was actually involved in
oh,
the acts themselves.
All right.
So, you know, I had no criminal intent
right,
because
right,
I was
right.
really an FBI agent gathering
gotcha.
Evidence, so it's not actually a crime.
Right.
But I was down, you know, getting my hands dirty with the bad guys. And those people, again, the ideology, they didn't care what group I belonged to. They didn't care whether I was doing
it's not
it
like
because
you're a card-carrying member of the KKK.
Right. There is no such corporate structure.
I see.
You know,
see.
These things are
– right,
and it's a strategy that they built. It's called leaderless resistance because they know that if there are those sort of corporate structures, there's responsibility that goes along with it that can be used by law enforcement to hold them responsible.
So in other words, you may have the grand wizard of the KKK, but the individual members don't have KKK membership cards. They simply attend meetings and do what vicious things they do.
Right. And the thing to remember about these groups is there are no rules. So there may be some guy out there who has a KKK clavern that does give membership cards.
Okay. But most don't.
Right. This is a very fluid sort of movement.
All right. It is 202-588-0893. John, welcome to the Inside Scoop Dialogue.
How you doing?
Doing good.
Look, this is going to sound crazy, okay? I had been reading this book called Triple Threat, and also I had did a web search. I was just doing a web search, and I looked on Wikipedia about Argentina and Chile, right? Now, this is going to sound really crazy, right? You're going to say conspiracy, the boy's a nut or whatever, right? But all this stuff seems to be so, like, interconnected, you know, like the guy was just talking about how they sort of looked the other way about domestic terrorism, you know, and if you look at the form of how, let's say, Chile and Argentina started, they said, well, you know, it's terrorism, you got to give us more power to do X, Y, and Z to stop terrorists. Next thing you know, people start disappearing, right? You see that happening in like in Latin America, like in Argentina.
So what's your question, John? Are we heading in that direction? Is that your question?
Yeah, because, you know, it seems like a formula, almost like a formula. When you look at, I remember.
Right, well, let me ask Agent German that. Yeah, let me ask him, because, you know, certainly in Chile and Argentina, Pinochet, they're governments that started with the kind of police state things like the Bush administration is starting. I mean, they're the first ones to say waterboarding isn't torture. They're the first ones to take Americans and put them in jail without trial. We've had secret prisons before, but now they seem to be justifying it. Are we heading in that direction?
I'm afraid that we are, and it starts with secret government activities, you know, and what's so counterproductive about it is that if you look at the terrorist strategy, that's exactly what he wants, because he starts out as a conspiracy theorist where in order to attract people to his movement, he has to make up these crazy stories about this, you know, Jewish conspiracy to run the world. And his goal in committing acts of terrorism is to start creating reality behind that conspiracy of oppression. And a lot of what the government does in response to an act of terrorism is done in such secrecy that it actually fuels the conspiracy theorists, and it makes reasonable people start to believe maybe there is something.
So when the government
is
involved in their own conspiracies, it not only fuels legitimate citizens fighting it, it also fuels these fringe groups that are – now, listen to this. You've explained why they hate Jews. Why do they hate blacks? Is it just they think white people are better? What?
You know, there's all sorts of different ideologies, but they believe it's an inferior race.
Okay.
And that they're...
They should be on top.
They should be on top, whether it's because of, you know, the way they read the Bible or because of, you know, the way they read philosophy, because the way they read science.
Do they even read, Mike? I mean...
Tremendously literary.
Really?
Absolutely. Tremendous...
They're just reading a lot of what? Mein Kampf? I mean,
Mein Kampf, a lot of their own publications. I mean, that was one thing that really surprised me coming in, because I was expecting a lot of not very educated people. And every meeting I went to, rather than handing me a machine gun, they would say, read this book, read this magazine, subscribe to this newsletter.
And they're all white supremacist magazines.
Right. Tremendous amount of literature. Tremendous, like I said, you know, decades-long, century-long philosophies behind this sort of ideology.
And again, folks, if you want to read more about these details, you can pick up Mike German's book, Thinking Like a Terrorist. It's on Amazon.com and in your reputable bookstores. Robert, welcome to Dialogue.
Yes, good morning. Good morning, Mike, and everyone else that with you. Got a big show, by the way.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, at this moment, I'm driving through an area where I usually lose my signal, but if it stays with me, I'll try to...
Try to make it quick, then, before you lose signal.
Okay. Great. Are you still there?
Yes, we're here.
Yes, great. I have had an online enemy, I would say, for the past couple of years. He lives out in Arizona. And I have been considering speaking to the authorities about it. I have spoken to several people before, but it seems like it doesn't get me anywhere. Let me quickly describe this individual and then ask you the question, Mike. You seem to be the right person for the job, and I'm really sorry what happened to your career, but it doesn't really surprise me. Anyhow, this gentleman, I ran into him a couple of years ago online, and he's very, very, very racist. He seems to have a German background. He claims he has been in the Special Forces, has received training at the Academy in Georgia, Fort Benning, the School of the Americas. He claims to be a mayor in some place at the border in Arizona. He talks to me about how he always felt about dragging someone in the sand with his Jeep. He talks about bearing people up to the neck and putting jelly or honey on their heads.
RG, are these things that he...
And my question is this.
Let me just ask you, RG, are these things... Oh, excuse me, Robert, let me ask you.
Yes,
Robert,
yes.
Are these things that he wants to do or things that he tells you he has done?
Well, these are things that he apparently has seen.
Has seen.
He implies to... I have no idea what he expects from me by saying this.
I mean,
things.
He could be
but
just some
imposter.
I think it's
insinuations that he has been part of it. Now, this person doing all these things, being a mayor and having all this experience or backgrounds that he has. How can, in first place, how can he be in a public place, and how can this person be taken? I am taken down from his position. I am concerned about going to, the police are not going to help me with this. If I go to the FBI, it wouldn't surprise me if they find out who he is, and he might just be some big shifter in within the authorities in the area or nationwide, and the one who might end up getting investigated would be me, you know, just like it happened to Mike.
Just to be clear, in terms of posing the question to Agent Mike German here, are you saying he says are you saying that he says he's done these things, or he wants to do these things, or he's going to do these things?
He doesn't specifically say he's done
that. Makes it tough.
He insinuates these things. He makes his moves strong, makes big, strong moves, but very carefully with what he says.
Okay, Mike, how do you respond to Robert?
The only thing you can do is report it to the local authorities and the FBI if you think there's some criminal activity, and it's up to them to do the proper investigation.
Have you reported it, Robert?
Excuse me?
Have you reported it?
No, because I'm still looking for the right authority.
He's afraid they may investigate him. What do you think?
I'm afraid that they're just going to look the other way.
Well, might this end up hurting Robert if he turns these people in?
Obviously you have to have your facts in order, and if you have factual information that you can report to the police, and you believe that indicates some sort of criminal activity, that's probably...
Robert, what I would do is I would keep a copy of all these things that the guy writes, and particularly when you see that he is advocating criminal activity, you know, actually not just fantasizing, but talking about dragging someone behind a truck or any kind of act of violence... Then I think you should go to the authorities.
Yes.
And I tell you,
I have probably 150 emails that I have received.
I'd send them on. That's my personal view. Thanks for your call.
Yes.
I appreciate
Thank
it, Robert.
You.
Let's go to RG. RG, welcome to Dialogue.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you today?
We're doing good.
Good. Yes, I had a little question. I'd like to augment the scope of this discussion a bit.
Okay.
Into the fact that looking at terrorism and violence as a part of the scope of the agent that is on as your guest today. What about areas such as looking at the FBI, how it's looked at generally by the public, the status of COINTELPRO, and if there is a contemporaneous constituent form of it?
Great question. Let's explain quickly to our listeners. COINTELPRO, of course, was an undercover operation in the 60s and 70s to try to infiltrate anti-war organizations and to tear them apart. J. Edgar Hoover's great idea. Anything like COINTELPRO going on today, Mike?
Well, certainly when you look at the scope of the intelligence programs that have been revealed since 9/11, you know, whether it's the NSA warrantless wiretapping program, you know, the Department of Defense spying on anti-war protesters, the FBI spying on peace groups.
Apparently even Quakers in Vermont got spied on.
Right. The FBI's misuse of its national security letter authority that was expanded under the Patriot Act, that I think the similar types of abuse that happened in that exact same situation, in other words, we're almost reliving that period where this period of fear of the Soviet threat sort of encouraged the FBI to go out and do these radical things that, in hindsight, were not only totally illegal but completely improper in a democratic society. And I'm afraid those types of activities are still going on.
So it may not be the name COINTELPRO, but the exact same stuff is going on right now.
Right, and what we have to realize is that when we relax the rules, we're not really making ourselves any more secure, because the people who are going to end up getting hurt are the innocent rather than the guilty. You know, our system is built so well to focus on people that we have evidence to believe, our criminal system prior to 9/11, to focus on people who are actually doing something wrong and who the government has evidence against them before it can take action against them, where now we seem to be doing a lot of guilt by suspicion, guilt by association, and that can have real impact on people's lives. And, you know, I could just bring up Brandon Mayfield as an example, an attorney out in Portland, Oregon, who, because the FBI erroneously thought that a fingerprint found on a packaging material of a bomb in Madrid fit this guy, former Army officer, stellar person in his community. Because of this misidentified print, they started leaping to conclusions, and it turned out Mr. Mayfield was Muslim. And to the FBI, that meant that perhaps he's guilty now because he's Muslim. And that shows where once the rules are relaxed, and the rules were relaxed under the Patriot Act that allowed them to pursue that investigation further without real evidence of wrongdoing, and, you know, the gentleman spent 2 weeks in prison.
There's also the case, recent case, of the Egyptian man who was in a hotel room in New York City, and they found some aircraft navigation equipment in his hotel room, and they literally tortured him until he confessed that he had the navigation equipment. And then after torturing him, it came the person who was in the hotel room prior to this Egyptian man, who was a pilot, said, "Hey, I left my navigation equipment in the hotel room."
Right.
And we had tortured an innocent man.
Right, which is another example. And to try to instruct on how dangerous this is, you have to understand that what the terrorist is trying to convince his followers is that the rules don't apply anymore. The law is off. You can do whatever you need to do now because there are no rules. And when the government engages in activities that make it look like the rules are off, that helps him recruit. And that's why we've seen such a great rise in terrorism around the world.
So when the government acts like a terrorist, it leads to more terrorism, more anti-American terrorism around the world.
Right. You know, this is a trick, and we've fallen into their trap by engaging in these activities that go against our American values and undermine the rule of law, which is what actually protects us from this type of violence.
202-588-0893. Jamila, welcome to Dialogue, the Inside Scoop.
Hi. I'm so glad he brought up the Mayfield case, because that was right into my question.
Great.
As a woman of color and Muslim, I'm just wondering, from the FBI agent and even your perspective, is it that, because Mayfield was a man of color and Muslim, which is why we believe that he was messed with. Is it any reason to believe that the reason this white supremacist case wasn't pursued is because these were white men? That's an honest question.
Mike, what do you think?
I certainly think that there is much less attention paid to the level of violence that is conducted in that white supremacist movement. And, you know, the Southern Poverty Law Center just recently released a report that showed over 60 terrorist acts that had been stopped in the white supremacist movement since the Oklahoma City bombing.
I mean, when I think of Timothy McVeigh, the Oklahoma City bombing, and you know, for a long time, the whole panhandle of Idaho was filled with and Aryan Nations and all these groups that literally had militias. I mean, they would get out there and do the kind of training that we see Al-Qaeda do in Afghanistan, only they did it right here in the United States. And they get together with guns that were legally bought under our nation's gun laws, and the flak jackets and the whole bit. And they were training. I don't think it was for good. I mean, are these things being investigated?
You know, there are still plots being uncovered. They don't receive a lot of media attention. One good example is a man named William Krar, who was recently arrested in Noonday, Texas. He had all the ingredients necessary and pled guilty to manufacturing a chemical weapon. Now,
wow. We went to war over chemical weapons.
Exactly. And here was a weapon that was reported to have been capable of killing 30,000 people if it had been used. And, you know, there was very little press attention paid to it.
And he was with the white supremacist movement.
He was with an anti-government militia type.
And this got virtually no press.
Very little press. And you know,
30,000 people could have been killed by this guy. And, you know, we're focused on you know, maybe someone from Iraq will come here.
Right. He had an entire, like, rental warehouse full of illegal guns, pipe bombs, all sorts of different explosive devices. And the only way he was captured, again, it wasn't any of these Patriot Act powers,
FBI,
National Security Agency warrantless wiretapping. He had been creating false ID. Like I said, these groups do a lot of other criminal activity not directly involved in violence, and apparently had been manufacturing these fake IDs for some compatriot in the cause, and he had mailed them, and they were delivered to the wrong address.
No way.
And the person who received them reported it to the FBI.
So he got caught with his fake IDs, not with the chemical weapons, not with the pipe bombs. And here we went to war with Colin Powell describing how Curveball, this guy in Germany, described how supposedly Iraq had these mobile weapons labs, biological weapons labs that they didn't have. And this guy is designing the exact same thing in the United States, and he wasn't caught by the FBI. He was only caught because he sent this stuff to the wrong address.
Right.
Amazing.
And if you look at the statistics, you know, there are always much more domestic terrorism prosecutions than international terrorism prosecutions. That's because when they're here, they can do a lot more, and as you said, their access to weapons is...
How much of domestic terrorism is connected to white supremacy and the larger movement that hates blacks and Jews and so forth? I don't know if you can quantify it.
Yeah, it's very hard to quantify.
Is it half?
You know, it's interesting. The FBI, for a couple of years after 9/11, kept saying that the fringe environmental criminals.
I don't see the Sierra Club bombing anything.
Well, no, not the Sierra Club.
No, okay, but people putting spikes in old
Animal Liberation Front, you know, things like that. Those groups were the number one domestic terrorism threat.
That's remarkable. That can't be true.
Certainly anybody is capable of committing an act of terrorism.
Sure.
It doesn't take a whole lot of genius to put a pipe bomb together, and certainly I believe that the arsons that are sort of the hallmark of that move, that criminal movement, are acts of terrorism.
Of course, that's an act of violence. California wildfires and everything. Right.
You know, the fact that they say they didn't intend to hurt people doesn't mean that people won't get hurt if you unleash something like
fire. But they've
got
to be very small compared to the white supremacists.
Well, certainly they've never killed anyone.
Okay.
And the white supremacists kill people, you know,
readily.
The criminal element within those groups, you know, there's quite a bit of violence, and a lot of that violence is directed at police officers because police officers represent the arm of force of the government. So they're a very normal target. And, you know, if you look at the Oklahoma City bombing, this is very capable organization.
Okay, we only have a few minutes left. I want to get as many callers as I can. Judson, welcome to Dialogue.
Mr. Levine, Mr. German, this is very quick. One, I'm taping the show. Is this against the law? Yes, no, or
no.
Don't know.
It's not against the law to tape the show.
Have you read, Mr. German or Mr. Levine, Shibumi in 1978 by Trevanian? Yes, no, or don't know?
I have not.
I have not.
Bo's comment, he said, quote, "I believe everything you say." That was the statement. Four, what is the ISBN number of your book, Mr. German, or do you know?
I don't have that right at hand.
I'm sure you can get it. Just go to Amazon.com. It's Thinking Like
a
Terrorist.
I'm not on the net, sir. Thank you. Five, this is a statement. I talked with somebody who was suspect. He said that it was either the U.S. government or a major corporation. I'm not sure. No, it had to be a U.S. government. Has taken icebergs from the Northwest Passage, and they're using it to irrigate land in the United States. And he also said that either a corporation or the U.S. government was...
You know what, Judson, we got three more calls holding, and we only got about a minute left, and it's kind of off topic, but I want to thank you for your call. Let's go to the next caller. Go.
Give me a competency rating for the FBI between 1 and 10.
1 and 10, competency.
The agents on the street, I'd give them 8 to 10. Management, I'd give them 1 to 2.
1 to 2. I'm afraid that's all the time we have. Listen, if you enjoy what I do here on The Inside Scoop, you can hear my radio show every day at RadioInsideScoop.com, 5 to 6 p.m. I always try to provide you all the news the government doesn't want you to know. And if you want to meet me, Mark Levine, former congressional attorney and now journalist, you can do so by going to the Pacifica Gala on Saturday, December 15th. Ask to sit at my table, Mark Levine. I'll be glad to see you, to meet you. It's also a great way to support WPFW. Thank you for listening in. As I said, you can hear Dialogue every Wednesday at 11 and my show the second Wednesday of the month, or you can find out more information at RadioInsideScoop.com. Former agent Mike German, thank you for your service to your country. You do an amazing job. This is Mark Levine signing off.